Well, it's great to see all the failures here today, because I'm just one more in the long line of presenting failures. We got no magic bullets here, so yeah, it was good. I thought, gee, everybody's got a great successes. Well, I work up in Oregon, and we do a lot of work with processed vegetables. And my collaborator, Jeff Mitchell, here in California, works both in agronomic crops and vegetable crops. So I want to report on some of our work and thinking, and it's always interesting in these symposiums. By the time you're the fourth speaker, most everybody's already said everything you're going to say anyway. So anyway, this talks about evolution, and so this is sort of seems to be where we're heading, at least with American populations. Plant breeding. Why have all those little bitty apples on there? Just bring the truck in there, chainsaw, drop that baby on there. You got to get a buyer's cooperative, though, to buy your apple, though. It's problem. So obviously, we're all here today because of our interest in soil quality. And just for those folks who haven't made the conversion yet over to the notion of conservation tillage, we do a heck of a lot of work out there plowing and working on the soil. I like these peds. Isn't that nice? And obviously what we're doing really is we're making clods once we start tilling, and then we're in the process of making smaller clods. And we work out there, and we get smaller clods, and we just keep working, and finally we're there, We just made dust out of it, and we think we might be able to plant, but just in case, we might moldboard plow one more time. It's just amazing how much people till their ground. Of course, that's not exactly what we're looking about in terms of soil quality, and then there's all the associated problems. So in this notion of developing conservation tillage, I think we really need to have a clear understanding of why it is we're tilling in the first place. What are the real good reasons? How did this evolve in the whole process? And because each one of these things we have to more or less deal with in our conservation organic system, so we need to really understand what we're doing. So obviously killing existing vegetation, well, yeah. Breaking up soil compaction layers, all this tilling does do some of that work. We're incorporating in our organic systems, we're incorporating our surface-supplied composts and manures and fertilizers. We're creating favorable soil conditions for planting. We're getting uniform particle size, so our planting equipment can go in there. We get uniform emergence. Really important for our processed vegetable crop. They want everything to come up same day, equal maturity. And, of course, weed control technology, our equipment, being able to go through there and slice off all those little weeds and whites and all that kind of stuff. And it was interesting to hearing about trying to slow down nitrogen release in soy. I mean, we're trying to get nitrogen mineralization to happen. And one of the things that tillage does, of course, is accelerate mineralization. So, and then there's that whole slew of insect pests out there that are eating our crop. And if those of you on the East Coast, and I was at Virginia Tech for 12 years, here on the West, we have this horrible little critter called Symphylans, and tillage is one of the best tools that we know. I mean, they tried dynamite and everything. And, over the years, we've evolved the conventional no-till situation that allows us to plant into residues. And this is at Steve Groth's farm, no-till tomatoes up in Pennsylvania. And in the evolution of no-till, really, you have to look at how did it come about. Well, it was 2,4-D in 1946, atrazine in the 50s, the burn-down herbicides, paraquat, 1955, and then, of course, glyphosate in 74, and then the incredible array of specialized planting equipment and fertilizer applicators that have evolved since. So, as mentioned several times, it's a very herbicide-dependent system. And I'm not going to go through all these benefits. I always tell graduate students, don't have long lists of things up there on the PowerPoint. So just pick one, your favorite. They're all true. And, of course, here we have it, the famed roller crimper. This is it. This is the magic bullet. And you can get them all colors. That's really, I like the Captain America one up there on the left. I mean, I went to a farm show in Italy once, and I was looking for innovative precision cultivating equipment, and it was really disappointing. Man, oh man, they got really brightly colored implements over there. Same stuff, but all different colors. I mean, anyway, my buddy Jeff Mitchell is really active here in California in the Conservation Tillage Group. He's really a leader here on the West Coast. He should be giving this talk, but I got roped into it. Anyway, they tried some roll-down tomato work at Tom and Denise Willie's farm there in Madeira in 2006, rolling the cover crop down. There's what the field looked like when they stripped the before they put transplanted tomatoes. Results? It was so bad. They abandoned the plot and plowed it all down and started over. Well, here's some rolled down eggplant. Looks really nice. They're double band drip irrigation to give it plenty of water. That's a pretty picture. Mulch plant. I like it. There's what it looks like compared to the plastic mulch eggplant on the right. Not too happy seeing there. And what's the results? Roll down treatment reduced yield by 80%. So not happy seeing out here in this roll down stuff. There's the effort at roll down no-till organic cotton. Abysmal results. They abandoned that plot as well. So what are some of these problems with this roll down approach here, at least from the West Coast? Now, I spent 12 years at Virginia Tech, and I did quite a bit of no-till work back there, and we were rolling down cover crops in the late 80s. And clearly, when you got a big seed like corn and soybean, and you got an agronomic crop, yeah, there's lots of possibilities, no question about it. Vegetable crops out here is a little story, but I think there's some common problems that go across the board that we need to be really thinking about and addressing. And so I'm just going to walk through this real quick here. We've heard a lot of these already. You need a good stand, a cover crop, if it's going to work to suppress weeds. It has to be fairly mature. Here in the West Coast, by the time the rye reaches the state of maturity, it's way into June, and we've lost most of our planting window. We just can't wait that long. Maybe late planted pumpkins. Some of my Washington colleagues who had some marginal success in very late planted pumpkins. But other than that, it just gets too late. There's no mechanical weed control options. Once you've cut that slot and no-till planted, it's got to work, or, you know, what can you do? There's no cultivation backup here. And so it's all or nothing. It works or it doesn't, and there you are. Rye monocrops are not contributing nitrogen if they don't have a legume in the mix, and nitrogen is the big issue here. We've got to break the habit of relying on industrially produced chicken manure. It's all produced with GMO corn and soybeans. Rye also has allelopathic qualities. A lot of work done on this. You're planting your seed right in there. We're suppressing weeds with all those allele chemicals. Well, gee, what about our crops as well? No way to apply manure or compost in these systems. Maybe some of these precision systems that coming out of Pennsylvania. But boy, we're talking some technology here, some specialized equipment. Cold, wet soils here in the Northwest, this is a big issue for us, just getting the seed to germinate and the damp off diseases. Oh, I didn't mention fungicides are a big player in the conventional no-till, not to mention an array of insecticides that are used to control pests. And, of course, we here in the Northwest, we have a problem with slugs, and you do need specialized equipment. So there we are. There's our state animal there up in Oregon. How much am I time on it?
You got 8.5 minutes.
Okay, this is my time remaining?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, good, I like this. Okay, so moving towards the hybrid system, the Toyota Prius model, if you will. For several years in the 90s, I worked on strip-till systems, mostly with conventional growers because we were trying to reduce systems. Interestingly enough, the NRCS considers no-till and strip-till equivalent in terms of soil quality or soil erosion prevention and so on. So they're, from their standpoint, it's the same system. So these in this work, some cover crops, not some cover crops, it's all conventional stuff, you know, burn down the cover crops with Roundup. But I want you to focus kind of on the technology because we've evolved this into trying to make this work with organics. And this is basically a regular rototiller here with some of the shanks removed so we could just till the strip here and leave the cover crop in between. The nice thing about this, use standard planting equipment, no specialized stuff, because we have tilled strips in the row. This is the hybrid aspect of it. We're tilling zone tillage. We're preparing that seed bed, and then we're delaying cultivation in between, or not at all, depending on. So we did a whole series of on-farm trials, large block pair trials, standard grower tillage, whatever they did. And as we all know, there's no such thing as conventional. Everybody does a little bit variation, numbers of passes, different equipment. And compared that to our strip-till, used their equipment, harvested commercial lots, and took them all to the cannery and got all the yields. Along the way, the growers themselves evolved this different strip-till machine based on looking at literature and so on. And it, the very front of it, it's kind of hard to see in the line up here, but it has a disc coulter, spacer, a depth wheel here. It cuts through the residue. A fairly shallow shank that cuts behind. This is not a big ripping shank. It's a shallow shank that cuts through the plow pan. There's two wavy coulters behind that on each side of the shank. And then there's this basket on the back that does the finish cultivation on it. They built this machine, formed a cooperative, invested, and then we used it subsequently in trial. Again, in evolution here, we started off with a marker. It wasn't too long before we had GPS-guided equipment, and they added these baskets on the back, which are really great because they contained the soil that was spinning off of the spinner wheels. We're trying to contain all the soil in the basket. So we had 20 paired trials. Yields were equivalent, but there was a considerable savings in tillage costs and energy. And we've done subsequent analogy on energy costs, and clearly you save a lot of energy. In California, Jeff Mitchell has done a lot of strip-till work. This is strip-till tomatoes. There's transplanting the tomatoes in the bed. This has been, again, still conventional sprayed-out cover crops and tomatoes growing back in that. Lots of good success in the strip-till. So the question is, can we adopt this system for organic and create this hybrid system? So in 1999, we had set this trial, three treatments basically, conventional tillage. Now I should say this is not conventional tillage. We're using a power spader. And I'm going to, at the end of my talk, that's actually a conservation tillage tool, but that's quite kind of the organic farmers we're using around our neighborhood, and it seemed like I always liked power spaders, and I should call that, you know, really conservation tillage versus conventional. But anyway, and then we had two strip till treatments where we mowed the cover crop between the row, and then we cultivated with a high residue cultivator, randomized block design. And we used a cereal grain and common vetch. Common vetch does survive our climate out here. And we've had better success than with hairy vetch. And this we used step-toe barley in this experiment. We got away from cereal rye. Our growers, just their eyeballs roll when they talk about cereal rye. They don't want to deal with that big, tall stuff. We mowed the cover crop. There's our spader in our conservation till plot, a Rotera. This strip tiller, we use a four-row strip tiller. It only tills about 6 inches wide, and as my thinking is going, we need a wider strip. That doesn't really allow us much room. We used band-applied fish fertilizer, transplanted broccoli. There's what it looks like in our strip till plots. There's the conventional plot. And mowing, we used a little weed whacker mower to mow back. You can see how the cover crop just regrows. This is the high residue buffalo cultivator. This is a really essential tool, I think, in this operation. Not this particular company, but some high residue cultivator. And then hand hoeing in the strips. Interestingly enough, the hand hoeing was just really difficult because we were just confined to that little 6-inch band. And it was just really hard to hoe. We couldn't run our hose across the row, and it was difficult getting the cultivating equipment. Just as an aside, by the way, I am an entomologist by training. This is the conventional till plot. You can see the bare cracked soil there. These are flea beetles on there. These are fairly small plots in our experiment. There is the strip tillage. You see no flea beetles. And when we looked at the data, gee, do we need statistics here? This is our conventional till, and these are our strip tills down here. It really suppressed the flea beetles amazingly, right to the plot line. It was encouraging. And in broccoli yields, the yields were encouraging. Our strip till, either mowed or conventional, were about 1,000 kilograms per hectare or so less than the conventional till, but quite favorable. So. But the problems we had was, suppressing the cover crop, trying to mow it or cultivate it in the situation was difficult. And we kind of had this idea that we needed a new cover crop. That, you know, these cereals were really difficult to deal with. They're difficult to kill. And so in the meantime, I was working, I think I'll make it here, on Phacelia tanacetifolia as a beneficial insectary plant. It has this wonderful flowers that hoverflies like. And has the most fascinating root structure. This is on the surface of the plant. And more interestingly, the stem is hollow, and it's extraordinarily easy to kill. It just, you just look at it, and it dies. I mean, really. Now, for the folks on the East Coast, winter kills at about 17 degrees. So if you can get a stand in the fall with your vetch and let the Phacelia kill out and lay in there as a mulch, and you get a nice stand with kind of the nitrogen uptake in the fall. Phacelia is good at doing that. So, but here in the West, it does find this root structure is just absolutely fascinating. It's very amenable for mechanical to deal with it mechanically. It doesn't have those big balls that cereals have and the tough roots. Some of our conventional work comparing this is strip-till oats compared to strip-till Phacelia on the right. And so in 2006, we did a little work trying to see if we could roll this stuff down, planted Phacelia. It's a very tiny little seed. You only need 2 pounds per acre. And our vetch, common vetch, we seed at 40 pounds. It's a much bigger seed than the common, than the hairy, so we seed at a higher seeding rate. There's what it looks like in the spring, the mix between vetch and Phacelia. That's another drawback. The bumblebees love this, and when you roll it down, you kill a lot of bumblebees and honeybees. It breaks my heart. But so when we did the biomass measurements of this, we had to mow a plot around a 10-foot area on a side and mow it all. You can't drop a quadrat in this tangled mess of stuff out here. It simply doesn't work. And we could produce around 200 pounds of nitrogen per acre. Most of this is in the vetch. Look at the percent nitrogen ratio of the Phacelia, 1.5%. It's considerably higher than you're going to get from any cereals at that stage of maturity, which means you're going to get more overall nitrogen contribution to the system, and a pretty substantial overall yield of the mix. So we, this thing is not shutting off yet. So we did a little experiment mowing it and chopping it all up so it could be degraded. Let me back up here. And we rolled it with the roller and used the strip tiller. This is the second pass equipment. And with the, this is a modified second pass equipment. And plant into that. The cultivator is highly necessary in between the rows. So you need all this specialized equipment to do strip till. This is the drawback. You need the strip tiller, you need a second pass tiller, you need precision in-row cultivation, you need a high-row cultivator. You got to have a whole tool shed full of stuff to make this work. Is it worthwhile? I don't know. Okay? Theoretically possible? Yes. But again, it comes back to what Kathleen's talking about. Is this practical? Maybe, on a large enough scale, you know. I mean, I think you could make it work, but we're a long way to getting all the details figured out. But it opens up the window of thinking about this hybrid system of zones. Cultivate, do all the stuff in the zone, and then roll down and do all that other stuff out in between. So.
We have time for one question, if anyone has one question.
Speaker.
Yeah, John.
John, at one time we had thought about designing a system whereby you would strip till, but then after you strip till, you would have some kind of residue mover that would move the residue into the row to help control weeds in the row.
I like that idea.
Back with your cultivator. Have you tried anything?
No, I like the idea of actually, I mean, you're coming back and blowing, having forage crops that you came back and forage chopped. Came back with a blower and blew. I mean, those are all other ideas. The other, I think, an interesting concept that Jeff has been talking about is when we plant the cover crops, planting strips of perhaps vetch in the tilled strip, and then cereal rise out in between, the mixture out in between, and then till the vetch in, and then roll down the stuff in between. So you can do that easily by partitioning your grain drills. Yes.
Cornell is working on a lot of that blowing and mulching sort of stuff. They've got a big program on that for people who are interested.
Okay, all right, thank you again.